Welcome back to God Invention Radio, presented by Inventor's Digest. And now, here's your host, Brian Free.
Welcome back to God Invention Radio, segment 3 with Kevin Prince from Quick Patents. Just one more quick announcement about Inventor's Digest, by the way. The November issue features the winner of the 2010 Alt Energy Challenge. Congratulations to the University of Pittsburgh, and remember to subscribe to InventorsDigest.com. All right, Kevin,
yeah.
You're with us, right?
Yep.
So listen to this. I was with I was speaking to an inventor this morning, and he did a patent search, and he showed his attorney, and they gave an opinion, and he said, "I'm sorry, it's not patentable." And he said, "Why?" He said, "Well, it's not exactly the same thing as what you want to do, but there were four different prior arts and claims and everything else that made it so he really didn't have too much of a chance, but he still feels like his is different." What do you think about that? I mean, it looked to, and it sounded to me like it was overlapping artwork, and, you know, it was really based on the claims, right? The claim of the claims.
Yeah.
So what's the deal with that?
Well, you need three things to get a patent, and right now we're going to be talking about utility patents. This is true for design patents, too. But
okay.
The three basic things are, the first one is it has to be useful, and that's usually pretty easy to show. The second thing is it has to be novel, which means no one's done exactly the same thing. And believe it or not, that's usually pretty easy to show, because otherwise the inventor probably wouldn't have come up with it. He would have seen it on the market or someplace and just bought it. Now, the third thing is it has to be what the patent office calls non-obvious. And what the patent office means by that is that if there's bits and pieces of your product that are available in other products or other patents, then they can make the claim that it would be obvious to put those bits and pieces together to come up with your device.
Okay, so basically in this guy's case this morning, he may have something different, and it overlaps on each one, so he may not necessarily be able to get patent protection or any kind of intellectual property protection, but he still can continue to put the product in out in the market and really not have any problems. Nobody could sue him.
Yeah, if his product doesn't infringe a single other patent that's out there, then he's probably in good shape from that standpoint. And I have to tell clients this all the time. A patent is not a license to make and sell something. It's a license to stop someone else from making and selling something. So there's lots of people in the marketplace with products making lots of money that don't have patents on their products. It's just if you do have a patent, then you can keep more of the competitors out.
Okay. You know what, Kevin? I want to give the phone number again. I'm getting emails. Thank you for the information, all kinds of good stuff. Thank you, listeners, for your emails. You can also call up. I know that a lot of you have questions, even in my inventors group. So many questions are about intellectual property, trademarks, copyrights, all these different things. You can ask Kevin directly on the show right now. He'll answer your question, and you don't have to go to an attorney and spend money for a consultation. He's here with us right now, 877-474-3302, or you can continue to email me. You can email me your questions, brian@gotinvention.com. All right, Kevin. So I want to understand then. So this guy – this morning, he's okay with going through and marketing his product if he really wants to. But he's not maybe this he's infringing. Well, not infringing, but one patent with the claim had something that he was going to do. Another one had something that he was going to do, but all the others really weren't anything that he wanted to do. It just kind of really overlaps. So it's he is able to put it in the market, but technically, somebody could rip it off, as you call it, or copy it right away, and he can really do nothing about it.
Yeah, and maybe an example is the best thing to go through here. Let's say that you wanted to you invented a combination shower radio and a soap dish.
Okay.
And so you took a standard kind of a battery-operated radio, and you just formed a concave section in the top housing of the radio to form the soap dish, and you sent that into the patent office. Well, they would say they would reject that application. Even if no one's ever made that kind of a product before, they would reject that because all you're doing is you're taking a known radio, a known battery-operated radio, and a known structure for a soap dish, and you're putting them together in a way that's going to give you, and here's the key words, it's going to give you expected results.
Okay.
There's nothing unexpected about how that's going to work, and anyone who makes plastic housings would know how to do that. Okay. Now, if when you turn the radio on, it blows soap bubbles to the beat of the music or something like that.
A good one.
You know, now you're talking about an interaction going on between those features that is not obvious. I mean, that's kind of the level that the patent office wants to see before they're going to issue a utility patent.
Okay.
Now, what the inventor might do at this point is maybe you file a design patent on the thing. You run with it for a year in the marketplace, and if it's a big hit, then you think about, you know, maybe there's a way to file a utility patent. Because we have a one-year grace period in the United States, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Hmm. Okay. Well, that's a good example. Do inventors have trouble understanding what novelty and obviousness and all that kind of stuff? I mean,
one of the other problems is that the KSR decision, it was a Supreme Court decision in 2007, made it easier for the patent office to reject utility patents based on obviousness. And so we saw the allowance rate go from about 65% of applications down to about 45%.
Okay.
Now, I'm kind of getting the sense that with Director Kappos in the PTO now that the pendulum's kind of swinging back, but you know, it's still not a trivial thing to get a utility patent through.
Well, you're right. I mean, it seems like it's changing quite often.
Yeah, and you know, 98% of the applications will get rejected at least once, and then the great majority of those are because of this obviousness problem, what they call Section 103 issues, and then you have to argue with the patent office. You know, you have to convince the examiner, no, it's not obvious. You know, and then there's a list of different things that you can go through, and you'd be surprised. Sometimes the examiners just didn't understand what you have, or they misapply a piece of the prior art. And so sometimes you can argue successfully, and other times you can't. So
okay, well, that makes sense. I have a question from Tom from New Jersey. He says, what's the difference between you doing the patent search for me or me going on Google or USPTO website?
You know, it's experience, really. It's more of an art than a science. And, anyone who's done this for a living for a long enough time has gotten good at knowing where the different patents are that might be lurking around out there. And your goal when you do a patent search is to find what it is you're looking for out in the patent databases. And it may be that what you have is laying in plain sight, but it may be that you have to lift up a couple of rocks and really look hard to see if you can find it. So, you know, I have a lot of clients who have done their own search, and that's fine. I always recommend, especially with utility patents, that you have a professional search done before you spend, $3,000 or more on a utility patent. You really ought to spend $300 and do a professional search, because when I do a search, 80-85% of the time, I find something that's pretty close.
Right. So far at this point, Kevin, I hope that answered your question, Tom. So far at this point, I mean, is there any particular process that we should go through? I mean, do you think the first thing we should do is do a patent search, and when should we do a patent search?
Yeah, if it's the type of thing that that you could get a utility patent on, then absolutely you should do a search. And I actually, on my website, I tell you how to do your own kind of quick and dirty search, using the USPTO website. But also, google.com/patents is a pretty good resource, too. It's free. They've got a really, really simple interface. And what I like about Google is that they've indexed the patents going all the way back to the 1700s, which means that when you do a text or a keyword search, their database is going back all the way to the earliest patents. Okay. And that's not the case with the PTO, the Patent and Trademark Office website.
Okay, so you're saying to do this quick and dirty search from your process that you show online, and then you take it obviously further, where you go in depth to really see if there's something prior art and claims and so forth that are there.
Right, because it's going to be a numbers game. You know, if you have 10 inventions, you'll probably be able to find 5 of those yourself. Right. And so you won't have to have spent the money on the professional search.
Okay. And when should we do a search? Should we do it? Should we make a prototype up first, or should we do? When should we do this patent search?
It depends. But if you're about ready to spend a lot of money on a prototype, then I would do the search first. But if it's easy to make the prototype, just to prove that the idea or the concept works, go ahead and make the prototype.
I always say to just do a quick search first. I mean, really, before you start spending time, money, effort, I think time is a valuable asset too. So
that's
just,
true.
It takes a moment just to look it up, right? Google.com/patents.
Yep.
And also USPTO.gov.
Yes. And the three things you want to do, and the three things that we do when we do a search, you want to look at keywords, and I have a little keyword worksheet on the website that kind of walks you how to do that. Not only do you want to look at certain keywords, but you want to look at their synonyms.
Okay.
And I go through that process. And then you also want to, if you can find, in the first phase of the search, if you can find those patents that have kind of common class and subclass listings, then you're probably onto a good subclass, and you want to look at all the patents in that subclass. And once you've got a nice list of relevant patents, what I call your A list, you then also want to look at your forward and backward references. And those are the patents that are listed on the front of all the references that you found. That's the results of the patent examiner search, basically.
Okay. Well, I like to do a basic down and dirty search myself and then go to somebody like yourself to do a patent search. This way I know that before I start spending money on utility patents and making prototypes and starting to talk to people about my idea, that I know that it's something that I kind of have a clear path to know that I have some sort of opportunity for intellectual property protection. So we're going to find out more in a few moments with segment four. We're going to talk about licensing, and we're going to talk about venturing, and we're going to continue to talk about patents and the cost. And keep your questions coming in. You can call 877-474-3302. You can call up now and be queued in for segment four. We'll be back with Kevin Prince and Got Invention Radio on WSRadio.com, the worldwide leader in Internet talk. We'll be back with segment four in a moment.
Do you have an idea or an invention and not sure what to do next? Take the first step and get your copy of the book, You and Your Big Ideas by Brian Fried. From protecting your idea to developing it and bringing your product to market, this handy resource guide is a must-have for every inventor, innovator, and entrepreneur. This book is all about you and your big ideas and bringing them to life. Only $10.95. Order now and also receive your free product evaluation kit with the book. Call now.
From the newest Apple iPhone to the latest BlackBerry, Droid, or iPad, businesses are racing to use smartphones to provide content to their customers in real time to make informed decisions. Is your company positioned for the mobile application market? Is your website mobile compatible? WS Radio is proud to partner with one of the leading mobile software companies in the world. MentorMate has been programming mobile solutions since 2001 with 10 years of mobile application development experience. They provide companies with a broad range of services from creating custom iPhone apps to full-service custom software development. Because of their proven experience in the evolving mobile application market, MentorMate is leading the way with battle-tested solutions. Beware of startups. Experience is what counts. Go with a proven leader. For a free consultation, go to MentorMate.com/voiceofmobile. That's MentorMate.com/voiceofmobile.
Hi, this is Chris Murch, president of WS Radio, and for our regular listeners, you know me as Captain Email, a former Marine captain who's been teaching email marketing for nearly 10 years now. You can still get free resources at CaptainEmail.com, but I have a new superpower, also known as CaptainText.com. Text message marketing done the right way can be even more effective than email marketing, and that's saying a lot. But just like email marketing, there's a right way and a wrong way. So log on to CaptainText.com, listen to Text Marketing Radio, and take us for a free text drive. No credit card required. Or better yet, let me show you firsthand how it works. Grab your cell phone, you know that device you can't live without, and text WS to 313131. That's keyword WS to short code 313131 and see how fast it works. That's WS to 313131.
There's nothing small about the challenges of running a small business. That's why CBeyond offers big solutions to help you grow. In fact, more than 50,000 small businesses nationwide count on CBeyond's award-winning communications and IT services, like our local and long-distance, high-speed broadband, mobile, web hosting, data backup and security, plus more than 30 productivity-enhancing applications. To learn more, log on to CBeyond.net. That's the letter C, beyond.net. Big solutions for growing your small business.